Again, it's always this time for my voice. I don't know why, but it starts to get a little gravelly. So please bear with me in that. So as we are looking at some topics that we might term a hot button or sensitive topics, we are looking at the question of, does baptism wash away adultery? And so as I was thinking about class last week, I didn't do a great job. I'll go ahead and admit that to you. I'm going to go back, and I want to cover some of what I was talking about last week. You all had a great discussion and everything, but I didn't do such a good job. So there's some things I want to go back and cover better. So I'm going to quickly do that and move ahead. So we were looking at answering this question. There were a couple things I feel necessary for us to understand moving through this question in order to better apply it, better to understand the Word of God. So first thing we looked at was we need to understand baptism and what it is, biblically speaking. So again, we can speak as the oracles of God. We know His Word. What does His Word say about baptism? I'll invite you to go back. Those early classes we looked at that topic. And then last week, we got into a discussion of understanding marriage, biblically speaking. And this is what I want to go back and look at for just a minute. So as we try to understand what marriage is, we're going to go to four different places. The first place we looked at last week was God in the garden. So we went back to Genesis chapter 1 and really in depth in Genesis chapter 2. When you look at the text there, you look how God, not man, established what marriage was to be. We looked at four unique words in regard to marriage as established by God. Number one, that it was unique, that it was man and woman. It wasn't some other makeup, some other combination, but it was one man, one woman. Any other union is not that and is not marriage. I know what the government may call that, a marriage. That doesn't make one. Only God can define marriage, and He defines it as one woman and one man. Number two, the term untied. These two individuals are not tied or bound to anyone else. They are free to join into this union, and they are unbound by others. That leads us to three. Number one, they are bound to one another, united to one another. And it's important to understand, and Jesus brings this up in Matthew 19, that God has joined them together. This, again, is a union of God. God has bound them. God has brought them together. And then finally, they're one unit, one flesh. Paul will call them in his Corinthian letter. They are one flesh joined together, again, by God, with no other ties, one woman, one man. So that's what we see in Genesis 1. Marriage is God's institution. He established it. And so He sets the rules for it. And so just kind of keep that in mind as we move forward. That's super important. Then we went to look at, so God in the garden and Moses in Moab. So I'm going to go back to Deuteronomy 24. You may have some questions, and I'm more than willing to hear those, but let me get through what I need to say about it first, and then if you have questions or comments, we can go back. So Deuteronomy 24, and let's start at verse 1. I want to read through the text, and then I have a couple thoughts about it. So verse 1, when a man takes a wife. So number one, he's talking about marriage, right? That's the topic under discussion. And marries her, if then she finds no favor in his sight. You notice the term no favor there in the English Standard. Other translations may be a little bit different, but that's the idea. Because, why? Because he has found some indecency in her. There's something indecent, unclean in her. And he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand. and sends her out of his house. So it's a man who has married a woman. He's found some kind of indecency in her so that he wants to write her a certificate of divorce. That marriage, in other words, has been ended. And puts it in her hand, sends her out of his house, and she departs out of his house. And if, you notice the conditions here, that term if comes up over and over again. This is all based on conditions. And if she goes and becomes another man's wife, so this is a woman who's been put away for indecency, has now gone out of that house with a certificate of divorce and has chosen to marry another man. And the latter man hates her and writes her, so she's going through the same thing, writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of her house. Or if the latter man dies, so it's two different situations here. She's gone into the second marriage, and he has found some indecency in her. He puts her away. If the latter man hates her, is the term there. If he hates her, puts her away, or if he dies. So that's the two situations who took her to be his wife. Then her former husband, the first man who sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. Notice why. After she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord. And notice that. She's been defiled, and for him to take her back, he says that's an abomination before the Lord. Now, the text does not clue us in what happened to that man, that first husband, while she's been sent away. So I won't make any assumptions about what's happened about him finding a new wife or what's going on. But what God does say clearly is he's not to take her back. Because that, and he goes so far as to say, to do that is an abomination before God. And you shall not bring sin upon the land of God, upon the land that the Lord your God has given you for an inheritance. So he lays out the situation. Man marries a woman. She has been defiled in some way. He's found some indecency in her. Later on, it says she's been defiled. She goes out, marries another man. Whether he hates her and just sends her out, or if he dies, she still cannot come back to the first husband. All right, so that's what Moses writes. Now, why bring this up? I want to go first. It may seem a little weird, but I want to go back to set the context. Go to Matthew 19, thinking about this. Matthew 19. And notice this gets brought up in a discussion with Jesus. So Matthew 19, and we just begin at verse 1. Now, when Jesus had finished these sayings, he went away from Galilee and entered the garden. Entered the region of Judea beyond the Jordan, and a large crowds followed him and tested him by asking, "Is it lawful?" Let me start again. I cannot read. Followed him, and he healed them there. So Jesus is moving. He has large crowds following him. And it's at this moment, verse 3 says, the Pharisees came to him, tested him by asking. So they're coming to do what? They have malicious intent, don't they? What's their malicious intent? They're trying to trick him in some way to make him stumble. So, just note, that's the intent behind the questioning. All right, so they ask the question, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? So when they say lawful, what do they mean by lawful? It's obviously not Roman law, is it? the Mosaic Law. So he's going, they're going back to the Mosaic Law. They're saying, is it right with, in accordance with the Mosaic Law, to divorce your wife for any reason? Now, why would they ask him that way? What does that question imply? So there's a big debate going on, and it gets back to this any cause idea. I'm going to come back to that in just a minute, but just keep that in mind. So they're asking this question for any cause. All right, verse 4. He answered, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. Okay, so now they've asked their first question, is it lawful to divorce a wife for any reason? Now they're going to ask a follow-up. Verse 7, why then, okay, based upon what you're teaching, why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and send her away? All right, so what are they bringing up? So they're bringing up these two passages in Genesis 2 and in Deuteronomy 24. Now, at the time of Jesus' day, there was two schools of thought, from my understanding, in the first century in regard to the indecency. So if you go back to Deuteronomy 24, if he has found any indecency in her, there was one school of thought that was adultery, that he's found her to be someone who's committed adultery, and so then he puts her away. The other school of thought was that, no, what that means is if he's found anything about her he doesn't like, he can put her away. Go back to the first question. So that's the two schools of thought. And so they're asking basically about that debate. So there was the school of Halal and the school of Shimei who taught these two different ideas about Deuteronomy 24. Now, I'll come back to try to answer that question in a few minutes. So if you have a question about it, we'll look at that in a minute. But I just want to get into the context. So they're asking, so what's the right answer? Okay, now what's his response? Verse 8. He said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed... some other translations will have the idea of permitted or suffered. Suffered may be the best translation there. That he suffered you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. So what is Jesus pinpointing in his response about those two schools of thought? Okay, he never intended for divorce to be a thing of man. That's real important. I want to come back to that. Isn't he getting at the heart of any cause question? He says, what he's saying is that whole debate puts those two passages, Genesis 2, in Deuteronomy 24, at odds with one another. He's saying by that school of thought, you're actually making a conflict between what God said in the garden and what Moses wrote in Moab. He says those two, if you take the approach that it's any cause, you have put those two passages at conflict. And you also notice that the idea of Moses suffered it. Moses allowed it. Moses permitted it to happen. Now, let's go back to Deuteronomy 24 for just a second. So how do we answer the question, what is the indecency that Moses is talking about or writing about here? Now, in the text itself, I think there's some clues, but Paul actually answers this for us. If you go and flip over to Romans 7, Paul answers the question in writing about marriage in Romans 7. All right, so if we begin at verse 1, if you'll read with me. So Romans 7, 1. Everybody there. So this is English Standard again. Or do you not know, brothers, for I am speaking to those who what? Know the law. What's the context? The law of Moses. So what he's going to say after is coming from where? The law. Well, what is he talking about? Well, he's talking about Deuteronomy 24. That's the law of Moses, right? And Deuteronomy 24 is the part of the law that talks about marriage. Okay, so notice what he goes on to say. He says, for I'm speaking to those who know the law, that the law is binding on a person only as long as he lives. Now, I know the greater discussion here is about the Jew who is now Christian and what does the law of Moses apply to him. That's the bigger discussion of Romans 7. But for our discussion about Deuteronomy 24, he's going to use it as an illustration. Notice what he does. Verse 2. For a married woman is bound, what? By law. What law? The law of the husband? No. What law? The law of Moses. She is bound by law to her husband while he lives. But if her husband, notice again the conditions here. This is he's referring back to the conditional nature of the marriage. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law of marriage. Law of Mosaic, the way the Mosaic law treats marriage. Accordingly, she will be called an adulteress if she lives with another man while her husband is alive. But if her husband dies, she is free from that law, and if she marries another man, she is not an adulteress. So notice the scenario, the if question here. He says, if this person leaves their married spouse, married according to the law of God, and marries or unites themselves with another person, lives with. Notice again, he's not talking about one single sexual act, but he's talking about a condition of being, right? Then she's to be called a what? An adulteress. So what defiles? What defilement is under discussion? Paul says it's adultery. So if I go back and I'm looking back at Deuteronomy 24 in the text we've been studying, when he talks about if a husband finds some indecency in her, what's the indecency? Some just dislike? No, it's adultery. Adultery is what's under discussion in that passage. So here's the bigger point and the thing I want to get to. In Hillel's thought about Deuteronomy 24, that it's just any act he can divorce or put her away, that goes, number one, in contradiction to Genesis 2. Number one, that's most important. Number two, Paul says, you're misunderstanding of indecency. What it really is adultery. And that is the sinful act that she has incurred in her behavior. So why can the first husband not take her back? Well, Deuteronomy 24, because of the sin she has committed. And so he is not allowed to do that. With all that being said, is Deuteronomy 24 in conflict with Genesis 2? No, it's not. He's teaching the same thing that's taught in Genesis 2 and that Jesus will teach in Matthew 19. All right, any questions about that?
The sin is adultery, not marrying the second person.
Well, that would be, yeah, so the because he's found the indecency prior to that. So she's committed adultery. Yes, and that's why he's allowed to give her that certificate of divorce.
Right, so regardless of if she goes and marries somebody else, he can't take her back. According to what
Deuteronomy 24 says, he cannot take her back. Now, and just because she is calling it marriage to the second person, does that mean that it is?
No.
No. To go back to the first husband.
Well, he's dead now.
No, well, in Deuteronomy 4, it's the latter husband that dies. Okay, so, but if you go to Romans 7, which I think is where you're going.
So, since they got divorced, she can't be remarried. Just because the first husband is now dead, she still can't remarry because he wasn't a husband when he died.
Okay, if I go to Romans 7, it says that upon death, she is released from the law in regard to her husband. So whoever her husband is...
But she doesn't have a husband because they're now divorced.
All right, let's hold on to that thought because I want to explore that more. So it's a good question. That's a great question. So let's hold on to that. I don't want to speak more about Deuteronomy 24 and add more into it than I need to. Yes.
Defiled, and that was the reason for the divorce. Mm-hmm. So it's,
yes.
It's like marriage should be permanent. Divorce sounds like it's permanent.
Okay, yeah, so hold on to that thought. All right, so so from Deuteronomy 24, my main takeaway is it's not in opposition to the other passages on marriage. So that's the big thing that I want to take away from this. There's more to be said about the death and how that applies. Yes, ma'am.
What about, so it says that he found that she was defiled and then they divorced. If they didn't divorce, would that be wrong on his part because she committed adultery? Like, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, so would he be permitted, even if he found adultery, to then forgive that and move on?
Yeah, what if he said, okay, I'm going to stay with her, and he did?
All right, so there's nothing explicitly in the text about that, but the implication to me would be if he wanted to forgive her and move on, he could do that.
If she stopped living in adultery.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I have more to say about adultery. So there's... to add to that as we move forward. Any other questions about that? Yes, ma'am.
Although we're speaking in the text of she, this is on both sides.
Yes, this would apply both ways. So remember, marriage is between one man, one woman. So, yeah, this would apply either direction. So this isn't, we'll look more at that, especially in the New Testament, makes that very clear in Mark chapter 10. Any other questions? So again, Moses is writing perfectly in the will of God from Genesis 2. So he's not giving some extra thing that God did not give. He's not making some allowance that God did not allow. All right, so that's Moses. What about Jesus? Now, I've already read part of the passage in Matthew 19, but let's go back there. We're going to look at three texts with him. I want to look at Matthew 19 and Mark chapter 10. And then in Luke 16, we'll look at those three texts. All right, so if we go back to Matthew 19, Let's just look at that one more time. So again, Jesus, large crowds, the Pharisees come to him. They want to, by some kind of trickery, to trip him up. What's the question they ask in verse 3? So is it lawful to divorce one's wife? Is it lawful to end a marriage for any cause? We call that in America, sadly, no-fault divorce. Is that okay? Biblically speaking. And again, that's the only one that really matters, because again, marriage does not belong to the state. It belongs to God, and it's His. And so this is super important. God defines what marriage is, and it's only God that can break a marriage. Notice what the text says. The Pharisees came to him and tested him by asking, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? And notice what Jesus does. Have you not read, when he says read, where is he going? Genesis 2. He says, go back to the beginning. He says, have you not read that he, God, who created them, Adam and Eve, from the beginning, made them male and female, and said, therefore a man shall leave father, his father and his mother, and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Now, Jesus actually gives us a little bit of commentary, or he adds a little bit to Genesis 2. What does he add? Well, the end of verse 6. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. Who joins a man and woman in marriage? It's God. Now, how does he do that? Is this some magical force that's put upon a man and a woman and they become super united? How does he join them together? He is the one that formed the institution. He set the laws of the institution. That's how he joins them together. He says, this is what a marriage is. It's one man, one woman, leaving father and mother and being joined together as one flesh. That's what marriage is. Therefore, God has joined those two who have entered into that relationship. So any other relationship other than that one, if it's defined in any other way, is it a marriage? No. It doesn't matter what government or what individual or group of individuals call it a marriage. If it is anything other than what God described and prescribed, then it is not a marriage. All right, so what God has joined together. And then he adds one final thing. Let not man separate. Does man have power to decree divorce? He does not. It is God's. Only God can break a marriage bond. Now, how does he do that? Well, Jesus defines that for us. Let's go to verse 7. They said to him, why then did Moses command? I want you to think about that term. Did Moses command divorce?
No.
He did not command divorce. Man, you have to be careful with people who are false teachers, people who are under the influence of Satan. Satan did one thing in the garden to Eve that changed everything, didn't he? What did he do?
One word.
He changed one word. God never put not in that phrase, did he? Satan added that. What word was changed here that makes all the difference? Command. It was a suffered, wasn't it, in the original text? He allowed it. He did not command divorce. So that's them asking the question. Notice they're not inspired. They're faulty. And so they ask the question improper. You'll notice Jesus changes their word. Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and send her away? He said to them, because of your hardness of heart. They were motivated wrongly, weren't they? Moses allowed or suffered you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, that was not so. So what the Jewish people are doing is not in congruence with God's plan. He says, go back to the beginning. That's God's definition of marriage and what marriage is to be. The disciples said to him, if such, hardness of your heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. Verse 9, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery. Now notice he gives us two different categories of divorcees. What are they? What are the two categories of divorcees in that verse?
The ones who put their wife away for fornication, the ones who did not.
Exactly. And not fornication. Let's make this clear. Adultery. The term there should be adultery. Remember again, all adultery is fornication. Not all fornication is adultery. So adultery is very specific to marriage. Adultery is when one spouse becomes entangled with another person other than their spouse and commits the act of breaking that bond. So he says, and marries another, commits adultery. So you have those who are put away for something other than adultery, and those who are put away for adultery. Two different categories. He says, in that case, if you have a man who puts away his wife for any reason other than adultery, and then goes and joins himself to someone else, what is he? He's an adulterer, right? But what if he's put his wife away, or she's put her husband away for adultery? Well, he's going to answer that. Let's go on. So verse 10, the disciples said to him, if such is the case of a man with his wife, is it not better not to marry? And then he goes on to talk about being a eunuch. I won't go into all that. So what's taught here in Matthew 19? What is the only justifiable reason for someone to break a marriage bond vow and then go and marry another? Adultery. Adultery is the only scenario where that is given. So that's clearly what Jesus says here in Matthew 19. Okay, so what about Mark 10? So I got 4 minutes. All right, Mark 10. The Pharisees, so Mark 10 and verse 2, the Pharisees come up, and this is a recording of the same event. I won't read all of this, but if you go through the text there, you'll see that it's the same thing. It's in Matthew 19. Let's go to verse 11. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. So what does Mark do here in talking about this situation? Does he add us any information?
He flips the
who is who?
The wife, if the husband commits adultery, the wife puts him away.
Exactly. So it doesn't matter whether it's the woman who does it or it's the man who does it. If it's done, the one who does put away for any reason other than divorce and marries another, that individual is committing adultery. And that new bonding, that new joining, is not sanctioned by God. It is sin. One thing I wanted to note, I forgot to mention this. So if you go back to Matthew 19 and in Mark chapter 10, the verbiage is important here in the Greek. So the word there translated adultery is in the present tense. In other words, he's saying, this is an ongoing act, right? It's not as though they committed adultery one time and now that's been done away with. They are living in adultery. So that's very important, because I know some people have tried to find a way out of this teaching based upon trying to say, well, that was a one-time act, you have it washed away and you're good. Well, that's not what the text actually says. You'll notice in the Greek it has that ending on it that puts it in the present tense. So what he's saying is the one who puts his wife away for some other reason other than adultery and marries another does what? Is committing adultery ongoing. So it's an ongoing activity. And he's still in it. In Luke 16:18, in the word translated adultery there, it's a different word, carries the same meaning, but it is definitive in Luke 16:18 that what is under discussion is something that is ongoing sin. It's not a one-time action, but it is a lifestyle, it is a being, a state of being. They are living in sin. The sin of adultery. Okay. I don't have time. But next week, we'll pick up here. I want to go to Paul. Paul, in connection with Jesus, perfectly joined there. In 1 Corinthians 7, he brings this up and even makes it even more clear to what's going on. But I'm out of time for today. Thank you all. We'll be dismissed for now and join for our worship in just a few minutes.